Hello and welcome to the Fishing Guide Podcast. I'm your host, Brad Weekman. We have a special guest, someone that I've talked to a whole bunch and finally get him on the show, Boyd Duckett. I'm pretty excited to have you here. And I know we could talk about fishing and fishing tournaments. And of course, we're at Red Crest. We don't know who the winner is yet, but we will in a little bit, won't we?
We absolutely will. So, you know, not only are we on the podcast, but live together, right?
And that's right.
You know, what a great opportunity. So Red Crest provided that for us. Championship day. So if you're not watching the live stream, you're missing out. But we'll see who the winner is here 3 o'clock.
Pretty shortly.
Yeah, pretty short.
But let's skip all that new tournament stuff. Let's talk about old stuff. Let's start talk about your roots and how you came into where you are now. But let's focus on the beginning. Did your dad take you out fishing? How'd this all begin?
Well, you know, I guess becoming interested in bass fishing, I grew up outside of Charlotte, North Carolina.
Uh-huh.
And really, my brother and I, we grew up, and we're still really close. We talk every week. And we fished together a ton, obviously, through the years. But he was 8, he's 2 years older. He's probably 8, and I was probably 6. And back at that time, it was maybe a little different society than it is today. I mean, we'd leave the house, and we just had to be home before the streetlights came on, right? I mean, that's kind of how it was. So, so we would wander around the house, and we were outside of town, and we had a creek we played in and got caught crawfish and bluegill and all that. But we went far enough up that creek, and we came to a dam, and behind it was a lake. And it was somebody else's property, no doubt, but we used it like it was. There was never anybody around.
Right.
And now later on, Charlotte grew, and it became a subdivision called Pelham Woods. The lake is still there.
Right.
But that's where we both grew up and learned how to fish. And then our buddies and groups of us would go. And I remember, you know, those old days. You say that. I haven't talked about it in years. But we would take like torch oil. And we'd take a stick and wrap an old T-shirt or a towel or something we found in the garage, and we'd soak it in the torch oil. And we'd leave on Saturday mornings before daylight. I mean, we did this because we couldn't see.
Right.
And down there wasn't much of a path, so you're really walking through the woods. And in the summertime, there'd be these giant spider webs. I mean, the great big fat spiders. And so if you couldn't see, they'd end up on your face, you know. And, and we would take those torches. And somebody was a leader until their torch burned out. And then when it did, you fell back in the line. And the next guy, you know. And we'd get there long before daylight. We'd fish till almost dark. And that was really what I learned a lot about fishing in that lake. And it seemed like a TVA reservoir when I was that age. It's only about 20 acres. But it was the ocean, you know. So, but we learned to fish there, and then as I got older and in my teen years, I wasn't very far from Lake Wiley, so that's kind of my home lake that I grew up. And I started tournament fishing when I was 17, and back then there was a trail called the Jerry Rhines Fisherman's Bass Circuit, and it was really a big circuit. It was draw tournament. I mean, you know, back in the 1970s, almost everything was draw. Team tournaments were rare.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, local tournaments, like, you know, sign up for a hospital fundraiser they were draw, boaters and non-boaters.
Really?
So that was just where bass fishing came from at the time.
Uh-huh.
And so we had a chance to fish with a lot of different people, but that was the beginning.
That's the beginning. Let's talk about, so you did fish team trails, right?
Yep.
So who was your first team partner?
Well, so let me think. So I was in Charlotte until I was 22, and I moved to Nashville. My brother and I fished some together. I fished with a really good friend, Jimmy Layshock, from back in Charlotte. And so when I was there, those would have been my team partners. But like I said, I didn't fish very many team tournaments on Lake Wiley because almost all of them are draw. When I moved to Tennessee, moved in and started another business, you know, spent my whole life doing that as well.
Right.
And one of the guys that worked for me in my tank trotter shop, Glenn Cravens, we started fishing some team trails. Now, team tournaments were more popular in Middle Tennessee when I moved to Nashville.
Right.
And so that was more my introduction to the team series events. I was there for quite some time, but I was also traveling and fishing the Jerry Rhines, fished some of the the Bassmaster Invitationals and was fishing bigger tournaments. The FLW Tour wasn't out yet, but they had a tour, and I fished the Redmans.
Right,
Probably everybody my age. They grew up, right? Yeah, we all came from Redman, right?
Yeah.
And, but they established a trail called the Golden Blend. That was previous to the FLW Tour. And I fished those. And then as time went on, I built a second location in Demopolis, Alabama. I moved down there in 92. And that was probably the more serious team run that I had. And I met a guy when I moved down there named Bill Champion.
Yes.
And Bill Champion, he won the All-American.
Yes.
And, you know, fish Redmans and all that stuff. Really good angler. I wasn't there probably 2 or 3 weeks, and I don't know anything. I'm putting in the Tom Bigby Waterway, you know, Warrior River, and fishing. And he'd see me out there all the time. And we really solidified what really team fishing is, where you come together as a partnership,
right?
And you take your assets and maximize them. And we traveled and fished. And
you fished with Bill Chamber,
Bill Champion. Yeah, Bill Champion. And we fished together probably until I started fishing professionally. And Bassmaster ran an article. It was before I fished the Classic, so probably when I was fishing the Opens, which I believe started in 2002. And Tim, one of the writers, trying to remember his last name.
A lot of Tim.
Writer for a long time, Bassmaster. So he did a story, and he went and did some research, and he had discovered over 200 tournaments that I had won prior to me fishing bass.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Tennessee, Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, region, you know, just kind of in the southeast. So, and a bunch of those were team tournaments I won with Bill Champion, and we had a blast. And so it was a lot of fun to figure out that if you're team tournament fishing,
right,
it's critical. If you're going to be serious, if you're going to try to go win tournaments, you need to learn how to work with your team partners, just not two of you fishing.
Right.
And you have to respect each other's strength, and you have to know, you know, when you get lost mentally, when you're not on them, then you need to let your team partner take over, if he's got better momentum, right?
Uh-huh.
And definitely on technique. So we work together like that. And man, we had a blast. We won a lot of tournaments. So
what would you say was your first tournament that you said, I'm going to fish professionally, and here it is, I'm all in, this is it, this is like a red man, I'm all in, and say, honey, I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm 100%.
You know, it didn't, what was different for me, because I've always been a serial entrepreneur, if there is such a thing, so
right.
I've owned multiple companies my whole life, and uh-huh. I've always started. And I never really had time. I always wanted to. I won my first tournament on Lake Wylie before I moved to Nashville, so I was probably 19 or 20. And I wanted to fish professionally, but right. I had all this stuff going on.
Uh-huh.
And there wasn't that much money back then, right?
Right.
Okay, so I was scared to I wasn't going to give up what I had going to fish. So I did the best I could, like most guys that fish, right? You know,
right.
You work and you do the best you can. And it wasn't until, I fished some big events, and I fished some Bassmaster events, and every time the season would come, I wanted to go do that, but I had so much other going on. And it wasn't until 2002, and so my life's always been super busy, and so time is a pie chart,
uh-huh.
And success comes from whatever you put the most time in. So something has to be first. And everything else fits wherever it is.
Uh-huh.
And my companies were always first, and fishing never got that top slot. So from 2002 to 2012 was when I shifted fishing to the top location. Now, I still had a lot of other stuff going on, as I always have.
Right.
But if a lot was happening, fishing always got the first nod. And that's what it takes. If you're going to compete and win tournaments at the highest level, It takes 100%. I mean, you have to make it your top priority, and sacrifice everything else. So that was really
turning point.
Yeah, even though I fished my whole life, that 10 years is when I gave it the number one. Now, in 2010, starting Major League Fishing, and plus had other things going as well.
Right.
By 2000, it was the end of the 2012 season, and I consciously made a decision. I continued to fish the Elite Series, and but it wasn't, you know, as soon as you move it off of the number one priority, you suffer.
Uh-huh.
Because something
you
else.
You got to be 100%.
You got to be 100%, yeah. And it was more important to me. I had great aspirations of maybe where we could take Major League Fishing, and so that became the number one slot.
Right.
And so, you know, life goes on, and still love to compete. Let me back up. Now I love to participate.
Okay.
All right, I'm not competing, right? But I still, and I fish some of the pro circuit events, so have a blast going and being with the guys, but I moved Major League Fishing to that number one slot, and so we...
And we can tell today,
and here we are,
because
today,
it's
right,
successful.
Yeah, so, yeah.
And so let's go back. What would you say was your first best pole that you bought when you were, like, maybe getting in that 19, 18-year-old? Was it carbon fiber or something, wasn't it? Or
yeah,
they had some of those rods.
There were, but you know, I gotta say that. And remember, we became obsessed with fishing at that little Pelham Woods Lake.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and so I started, you know, saving money and buying equipment. In fact, in probably I was trying to remember, so when I was a teenager, we had a tackle store outside of Charlotte. It was called John Pease. I was trying to remember that.
Uh-huh.
And they signed up and became a Bass Pro Shop.
Oh, wow.
So, if you know, before there was Bass Pro Shops, you know,
right.
Johnny Morris, American Gun and Tackle, you know,
yes,
still a thing.
Uh-huh.
But he kind of franchised it in the beginning.
Really?
If you've never heard that story.
Huh.
So he would go take tackle stores, and he would offer, it's the same logo.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And he'd have the sign in your store. You'd become an official Bass Pro Shop affiliate,
right.
I guess, if I'm even saying that right. And then you had the opportunity to buy at a discount through his mass buying. And that was the beginning. That was before there was ever a Bass Pro Shop.
Yes.
So it was very, very early. And I remember he would go to a lot of the grand. I've since talked to him, so I know the part that I didn't know, right? So,
right.
But he would go to those grand openings, and I actually, met Johnny when when I was young,
right.
When he was just, you know,
starting out.
Yeah, just past selling out of his station wagon days.
Uh-huh.
Right? So that was pretty cool. Didn't at the time didn't have an impact because I didn't know what everything was going to become. But I got to say this, so. When I first started, I don't remember what equipment I had, but I remember when I got some money saved up, I bought an Abu Garcia 4-star. So they caught the rods back then, and that would have been, I was probably 12, so
right.
1972.
Yep.
And their quality was a 1-star and a 2-star.
Oh.
So their very best rod was a 4-star.
Yeah.
And then I bought a Johnson 170 reel, and I still have that combination.
Oh,
in my garage. Yep.
Oh, how
still
cool
have
that
rod, and it's whippy and it's terrible. And
it, you know, imagine you caught fish on that.
Oh, I caught fish on it, but it was the pride and joy of tackle for me. So, and I fished with it for a long time.
You have to tell us, what was the most expensive lure you ever bought, but what was the most expensive lure you bought when you were young? Was it a topwater, I'm guessing?
Yeah, let me think about that, because I don't maybe remember all of the prices.
Maybe a Hedden, or?
Yeah, obviously Hedden was really big. Zaraspooks were some of the early topwaters.
Maybe a Balsawood crankbait from where you were.
I'm going to guess it was probably a crankbait.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, when I bought a... So I bought a bass boat, wasn't a bass boat. I bought a 1959 MFG fiberglass boat.
Right.
That had a tiller steer 25 Johnson. When I was 15, it was before I bought a car. I bought a car or a truck when I was 16. But I bought the boat. I ran across it, and I bought the boat. And I think I paid $175 for it, which doesn't sound like much, but it was also
back then.
1975. And then I built a deck, and I'm, you know, as time went on, and I was able to work and make money, and then, you know, put a troller motors aren't like they are now, but, you know, a little mount where I could put a troller motor on it. But it was so funny because It's a 25 horsepower Johnson, and it was that big. It's as big as my 250, right? You remember how big the housing on Johnsons were back then? Yeah, so, but I could get out on Lake Wylie. I had a friend of mine that had a truck because I didn't have any way to pull it, and I had built this boat, and we'd go fishing on Lake Wylie, and my brother and I'd go. And so, yeah, my first boat, and maybe the one I was the most proud of because I had to make it become a bass boat. It was just a V-hole fiberglass. Right. I built a deck, put a trolling motor on it. Took some ice chests, made an aeration system when I could hold the fish, and just kind of built it out.
Right. So early on, we're still like loving this early on stuff and this information that you have. Early on, what do you think was the biggest, you know, because they give out trophies. What trophy do you have in your office or the one that you cherish the most besides the classic? But which one would that be, especially early on?
Yeah, so... So I won that first tournament on Wylie. That's probably not the most special one. I can tell you which one is the most special.
What's
one.
What's that?
So I'd moved to Nashville. I fished Percy Priest a lot.
Yeah.
And I got over there, and there was a lot of – and I didn't know – you know, I had to learn the lake. A lot of really good anglers.
Oh, yeah.
And they had a tournament in the spring out of Elm Hill Boat Dock. There was a famous smallmouth angler. His name was Tony Bean.
Yeah, Tony Bean. Yes, you absolutely. Tony Bean? Yeah. Yes.
So
famous.
Yep. So Tony Bean ran this event.
Oh.
And it was kind of a big deal every spring. And I won that tournament. And it was, you know, I mean, that was my first chance to beat, you know, and it's just local guys, you know, the best on Percy Priest, but still it was like the very best anglers from that area and guys that we looked up to. You know, that we couldn't compete with, you know, prior to that. So that one is for sure the biggest win. I mean, driving home after getting that, and there were a bunch of people there, and it was a big weigh in. You know, that wasn't common back in the day. You know, a lot of them were just kind of walk up weigh ins in that era of time. But on the dock and all those people there, and I won it, and driving home, man, you'd have thought I won the classic.
Right.
Because I kind of did for me, you know, at the time. Yeah, at the time. So
tell us what the craziest thing that ever happened, say, when you were younger in fishing tournaments. Because we know you put a lot of miles in and you do a lot of traveling. And there's a lot of bass fishing has a lot of characters. Mm-hmm. And they are always willing to play pranks and jokes on people. Are they not? Were you ever the end of someone's joke?
Let me think what I might have been on the end of.
Were you ever on the end of giving some?
Well, I gave some. Gave some. Probably I think about a time when I first started traveling, you know, fishing the tour on the Bassmaster side. Some of the guys put, we had been down in Texas and there were tilapia and I'm pretty sure it was tilapia from memory.
Right.
But at the end of the event, they put tilapia in my live well, you know, my empty live well at the end of the event. And of course, I came back, you put your boat up in the garage in the summertime. and normally if it came back from an event, I'm having to catch up on work and all the things. So it's probably a week, 10 days, maybe 2 weeks before I get a chance. And it was so funky. I mean, it was liquid.
Oh, wow.
I mean, you couldn't even pick it up. It was just and maggots. And so that was one that got me. But the one I really remember fishing the Elite Series one time, there was a motel, and the guys were, you know, a lot of the guys were staying there. Joe Twindle was staying there. And somebody one night, we went to dinner, and somebody thought it was a good idea to collect. So I flew into Zapata, Texas.
Right.
And I remember leaving Zapata, Texas, and there's a long dirt road coming from the airport, and there's rattlesnakes everywhere. Uh-oh. I don't know if it was mating season or what the deal was. The most rattlesnakes I've ever seen in my whole life was I don't know why they were all out. So some of the guys thought it was a good idea to collect these rattlesnakes and put them in Gerald Swindle's boat.
Wow.
If you ever see Swindle, ask him about that. All right. He was mad as... I mean, he was mad. I don't blame him. And it was stupid. I mean, that's not a very safe prank. Okay. But they collected up these rattlesnakes. So There was a lot of crazy stuff that happened, but that one was probably out on the limb most. As one of the worst ones I could remember ever seeing. Yeah. Yeah. He told me, I've talked to him about it since then, you know, and it was, you know, the whole season, like long after the snakes were gone, right. End of the season, he'd be running somewhere and the wind would blow on his leg and it'd scare him to death. He saw a rattlesnake coming out of the boat somewhere, you know, to get him. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, crazy.
I can see that. Well, that takes us up, unless you remember anything else that was memorable, but we'll have you back on the show one time and we'll let you talk about winning a classic, which is a, you know, achievement. Mm-hmm. Didn't get to win Major League Fishing Red Crest because you had to make it.
So, yeah, that's right.
So you can't win it before you make it.
Yeah, that's right.
And no. So that's a great thing. That takes us to Tackle Time. Tackle Time sponsored by Pico Lures. Pico Lures, of course, has a complete line of hard and soft baits, and also B&M Pole. If you're fishing for a crappie, make sure you check them out. They got all the crappie rods you'd ever want. Takes us up to the end. If they want to find out more about Major League Fishing, where would they go?
Absolutely. MajorLeagueFishing.com. You can learn, you can see all the things. We fish all levels from high school to Bass Pro Tour. So we have about 30,000 unique individuals that fish in our system now. And so join that, man. We work hard to make a great experience for tournament anglers.
And give us a little update on the live leaderboard stuff you have.
Yeah, something that's brand new. Check that out on the website as well is ScoreTrackerLive.com.
Okay.
ScoreTrackerLive.com is basically the live leaderboard you see the Bass Pro Tour guys use, same thing you look at when you go to ScoreTracker, and we're making that available to all anglers and all tournament directors. This is not part of Major League Fishing. This is ScoreTracker Live, not branded Major League Fishing. So it's designed, obviously, we designed it,
right.
But so that everybody can comfortably use it.
And
make it and be able to catch way release and enjoy live leaderboard. So you'll hear a bunch about that through the rest of this year, and hopefully a lot of the tournament organizations will take advantage of this live leaderboard, because, man, it changes bass fishing. It amps up competition.
And it's also fish management, which you guys are very backing into that and making sure that, you know, the fish habitat and everything that goes along with that Major League Fishing's working.
Absolutely.
With,
gives us a chance not to have a weigh in, and immediate catch weigh release is nothing healthier.
That's right. And there you go. There you have it. Like I always like to end the show, make sure you keep your hook sharp and your lures in the water.